Good morning.
Good morning.
It's great to see everybody. All right, so Jocko and I have been talking about the 10 Buddhist precepts. We're on number 6. The 6th one, and if you haven't heard them and you're interested in our lectures, they're online, so you can listen to the other ones. The 6th precept has to do with speech. So the San Francisco Zen Center translation is, I vow not to slander. And then another translation is, don't permit haphazard talk. And yet another translation is, a bodhisattva does not dwell on the mistakes of others, but creates wisdom from ignorance. So I wanted to look at these 3 and also talk a little bit about the Buddha's admonition for right speech. So we have these 3 different descriptions here of the translation of the bodhisattva precept. And one of them is don't dwell on mistakes of others. The other one is not to slander. And then the third is not to engage in haphazard talk. So I don't think that any of these 3 quite hit the mark. They seem kind of narrow to me. So let's look at not dwelling on the mistakes of others. So one of the ways that this is talked about is, you know, sometimes when things happen, like, for example, maybe you're a witness to a crime. So somebody asks you to tell them about that or to be a witness or whatever. So there's an example where you would certainly bring up something that you thought was, or engage in a conversation about something that you thought was a mistake that somebody else had made, right? So there are exceptions to this. You can't just say, I will never, ever, ever talk about a mistake that somebody's made. So perhaps the key part of this would be something like the part of not dwelling on mistakes. Maybe that's more key to this particular translation. So in that case, you know, not defining a person, not getting caught up. So sometimes especially when we don't like people or we don't like what they're doing, we really dwell on it. We really get caught on what they're doing. So I read this interesting thing in the Wall Street Journal today. So you may have noticed that Melania Trump went to Houston in stiletto heels. And many people made comments about this, that it was inappropriate footwear for the occasion. So this is something they perceive as a mistake that she was engaged in. So in the Wall Street Journal this morning, they had the same journalist who had said, like back in the 80s or 90s, she said something about how women who are politicians are always being pointed at because of the clothing that they wear, and how women are always being criticized for their clothing, and men kind of had it easier because they wear suits, right? And so in particular, she mentioned some instance where a woman politician had gone somewhere in stiletto heels and she was criticized. And then here we have the same woman who is a journalist criticizing Melania Trump for going to Houston in stiletto heels. So in some ways, this is this thing that we do as human beings, right? We decide that we have some question about somebody, we're not so sure about who they are, and so we're immediately so picky. Right, we're just immediately like want to say, oh, look what that person did. That just proves, you know, what my point of view. So we do this with public figures, but we also do this with people in our own life, right? We do this at the workplace, somebody we don't like at work. Every little thing they do, you know, it's like, oh, okay, I see that person, you know, they're doing this thing. So that's dwelling on another person's mistakes. And the problem with that is that every time we do that, we reify or concretize a notion about who that person is. We take them and we put them in a box, right? None of us want to be put in boxes. When somebody puts us in a box, it takes forever to get out of it. It's like, please let me out of the box. I'm really not that person. So we don't want to engage in that kind of dialogue internally, and in particular externally, where we get together with other people and say, oh yeah, did you see that? Blah, blah, blah. That person did this, that person did that. And it just proves my bad opinion about them. I mean, the flip side of this is we can say, isn't that person wonderful? Didn't you see that? They were great. They did the best thing. So that's not so bad, right? That's a good thing. So not dwelling on the mistakes of others. Not defining a person, not condemning a person, not getting caught in that. The other thing is that, so it's really important if we think about this not dwelling on the mistakes of others is a way to frame the way we think about some situation, the way we think about a person, and to how we're going to address that problem. So if it is it a problem, or is it just something that we're, I don't know, grousing about or making up or pointing out that it's a mistake? So that's a question to ask ourselves. In the case of Melania Trump wearing stiletto heels, I mean, really? Is this really something that we need to condemn someone because they didn't wear what we consider to be appropriate footwear to a public occasion? And on that level, when you look at it, it's really silly. It's just a really silly criticism of somebody. So to think about that and kind of put in context how we're relating to this issue of dwelling on another person's mistakes. How we think about dwelling on our own mistakes, because we do that to ourselves as well. I'm sure we've all had that experience of doing some kind of social faux pas or whatever, like we wore the wrong footwear somewhere. And then you're like just cringing inside. Oh, that was so stupid. I wish I hadn't done that. So this way in which we can just give ourselves a break and put it in context and say, you know, this is like not the end of the world. And even if we do make a mistake, that we look at our mistake and say, you know, I really wish I hadn't done that. That wasn't very helpful. I'm going to learn from this. I'm going to do a better job next time and let it go. You know, we don't have to flog ourselves for having made a mistake, or other people. Okay, so that's what I'm thinking about dwelling on the mistakes of others. This issue of slander, so that would be another translation, slander. So what is slander? Slander, the dictionary definition of slander is to make a false statement, a spoken statement damaging another person's reputation. So that would be slander. We often hear about slander in the context of some kind of public figure who's been slandered and they're suing, some kind of litigious thing. But sometimes we slander other people, get kind of caught up, excited about some relationship that we're having, a negative relationship, and then we find ourselves saying things that maybe aren't exactly true. And when we say those things to other people, again, this is a kind of slander. This is a way in which we, as soon as we start talking to each other about something like that, we're creating a situation where we are creating a kind of atmosphere, a kind of way in which a lot of people are defining somebody in a certain way. And we often say something like, well, so usually the kind of common parlance for this would be talking about somebody behind their back, usually is something like that. So that's a kind of slander that I think probably all of us at some point in our life have engaged in. And maybe we've been the recipient of. So it's really important to think about this. I think we have a grave responsibility to each other to ourselves to really discern and pay attention to the way we think about and talk about each other and that our internal dialogue to ourselves. Life is hard enough without making it harder. Most people are doing their very best to get through their day, and even when they're making mistakes, and this is true for us, right? When we make mistakes, we're doing our very best. We had a bad moment. So this way in which we can be more open and generous about the way we think about what something's person is doing. So slander, I think, in this context, to just take the kind of dictionary definition is way too narrow. In some ways, I think this precept is, it's about speech. You know, it's about how we engage and write speech. So the next one is, do not permit haphazard talk. So I went and looked up haphazard in the dictionary as well. Haphazard has about 20 synonyms. It's amazing. Covers all this territory. But here are the ones that I thought were actually applicable to speech. Unmethodical. Unmethodical speech. So in this context, this would be a way in which we could even say we have no method. So precepts are a method. Precepts are a way of a technique or a tool that we use to discern, talk about, think about the way that we act and function in the world. The precepts are very relational. Do not steal. Do not abuse sexuality. These kinds of things. So they're in relationship. So this is a kind of method to examine and question how we're engaged in our daily lives with each other. Also, unmethodical, the kind of freewheeling, which in many ways freewheeling is great. You know, create creativity, spontaneity. But in this way, being critical, undiscerning, catty, whatever those words are, slandering in an unmethodical way, this way that we apply the methodology of our teaching. So it's really important that we do that. Let's see, disorderly. Disorderly speech. Do not engage in disorderly speech. Indiscriminate. So this way in which we do not discriminate what is... I think of this as when our emotions kind of run away with us. So we just have this, we're just angry or hurt or whatever this emotion is that we don't want. It's like we want to get rid of this emotion. Blame is like that. Blame's an emotion where if we can blame the other person somehow, we don't have to look at our own activity. But there's something, blame I think comes from this place of we can't tolerate in some way staying present for our own participation. So it's like, get rid of this. Get rid of this thing. You know, I'm going to blame. So this is a kind of way of not discriminating, not looking at, not discerning what is actually happening. Arbitrary speech, careless speech, slapdash, slipshod. We're being very slapdash with our practice, slipshod with our minds. So this way that we really pay attention. That's a thing about precepts. They ask us to pay attention to places that, you know, we don't want to pay attention to. Places that we'd rather be slipshod, you know, be kind of wild and crazy. So this way that we're being asked to really pay attention to what we're doing and the effect that it has. I mean, the effect of what we're doing. All of these precepts, when they're broken in an indiscriminate way, like take the precept of lying. It could be that there are times when lying is okay, right? I mean, there are times that we can think of examples where we say, well, it's a little lie or whatever. If we actually tell what we're thinking, maybe it's really hurtful. So it's better just to keep our own counsel. It's not helpful. So that's a case where we might break that precept, but in doing that, we really have to pay attention to what we're doing. We really have to discern, is this the right thing to do at this moment? Is this actually going to be helpful? So that was what I was thinking about, those three ways of that this precept, this bodhisattva precept, is defined. And in the course of this, I was looking at my notes from the last time I talked about this, which was a few years back. And I had in my notes some quotes from the Buddha, which I thought actually were very helpful about right speech. So, you know, there's the Eightfold Path, and one of the one of the admonitions in the Eightfold Path is right speech. And so let's see what our august founder had to say about speech. He said, "And what is right speech? Abstaining from lying, from divisive speech, from abusive speech, and from idle chatter." So that's one of the kind of short, pithy things that the Buddha said. He said, this is called right speech. I already talked a little bit about not lying.
The last one, the idle chatter?
Yes, idle chatter. So, gossip. Talked a little bit about not lying. In our understanding of the precepts in Mahayana Buddhism, we, because everything is so relational, we have to take in the totality of a situation to discern whether or not we're breaking a precept. So there are times when you can just say, in the example of lying, you can just say, do not lie. But we also know that to say do not lie, to always be unfailingly truthful, has some problems. One thing is what we perceive as truth may not actually, what is truth, right? Like everybody's got their own version of what truth is. So that could be problematic. And often when we do these kinds of things like, I will never lie, we get kind of righteous too. And when we get righteous about these kinds of things and rigid about them, then inevitably that's going to be a problem. So we always have to ask the question is, I'm doing this in relationship to the totality of the situation with which I'm in, and is it helpful in this situation? So that has to be part of the equation. Divisive speech, I would say divisive speech is almost always unhelpful. Because to be divisive means that you want to separate. And one of our basic teachings is that we are not separate. A basic teaching of Buddhism is that because we are in this complete interconnected relationship with the universe, that we depend upon the whole activity and practice of the universe for our very life. If we didn't have the sun, we would have a very different life. If we didn't have plants, we would have a very different life. It's like you can take it to that level. We depend on absolutely everything that functions in this universe, and we are not separate from it. We are part of that whole process of reality. We help make reality, and reality makes us. This is the essential definition of Buddha nature, that we all have the nature of Buddha. This is the nature of what it is to be Buddha. So divisive speech separates. So anytime we engage in speech that separates, that's a problem. So when you're talking to somebody, this weekend I went to what we call family camp, which is we go camping with a lot of relatives, about 17 people were there this weekend. So I was talking to one of my relatives who voted for Trump. Okay. So I knew that this person had probably voted for Trump. And there had been this conversation amongst the general group about how terrible things were. And so I thought, well, I would go check out with him kind of how it was. Now, I'm not always skillful in my speech, but I knew that this was a time when the Buddhist precepts would come in very handy, that this was a time to really remember that we are not just as people connected, this is a member of my family, right? So that it's interesting about families, because sometimes we feel just so completely free to say whatever comes to mind, however it comes to mind. And at other times we say, you know, we remember our kinship with each other. But essentially we're all family. All of us are family, not just as human beings, but the whole world is in this family way with each other, right? So anyway, so I said, you know, did you vote for Trump? And this person said yes. And so we started talking about that. And you know, because I was really open to what he was saying and wanting to communicate, while we had different views of exactly the same thing, I could certainly see how he was thinking about that. And he said to me, he said, you know, I think there's going to be a revolution. I think there's going to be an armed revolution in this country. And I said, well, you know, in the 1970s with Vietnam, actually, we all thought there was going to be an armed revolution in this country, and there were people who bombed. And those of you who are old enough to remember this are people who dropped, you know, set off bombs and robbed banks and did all sorts of stuff. That was very violent. And he said, well, why what was the big deal? Like, why were people so upset during the Vietnam era? And I said, well, one thing was everybody was being drafted. Men were being drafted, and that was kind of like real close to home. So when you get drafted, then you might hit the streets. So my point here is that by being open and listening and being willing to have a dialogue, is we could actually have this dialogue where maybe we could learn something new that we didn't know before. But if we went into the dialogue with this idea that I'm right, you're wrong, on his part, because he knows my political beliefs. So for him, it would be like, she's wrong, I'm right. And I'm sure he also was practicing right speech, right? He said, this is my aunt. I'm not going to sit here and say to her, you know, right off the bat, you're full of shit. So this way in which we agreed that we would have this conversation with each other, and where we could actually find out something about each other that brought us together, that made us closer to each other, in which we could trust each other to be able to have different opinions and be able to talk to each other and love each other in the course of that conversation. And I think that's ultimately what we want to do with everybody. And I was also thinking before I came in here about that particular time, the 70s, when it seemed like everything was just going to blow up. Martin Luther King was still alive then, before Martin Luther King was killed. And Martin Luther King believed in nonviolence as a way of communicating. And that was his influence was so important, and after his death so poignant and so clear, that how influential and great he'd been in our culture. So I think that was an inspiration for all of us to want to pick up that mantle and carry forward with that teaching. So this way of not being divisive, not pulling apart, abusive speech goes along with this. Abusive speech is not helpful. I can't think of a time when it's helpful to abuse the other person through speech or to abuse the self through speech. Idle chatter, of course, is gossip. So, you know, gossiping. Gossip, you know, I think gossip by definition is often speaking ill of somebody else. But there's also a way in which we, maybe this is a kind of gossip too, where we engage the other person. It's a kind of social talk. So it really has no purpose, but we're sharing information with each other. So in a way, that's kind of like gossip. Oh, did you hear about this? And this happened. I think my Facebook stream is like that, right? Facebook is now the new gossip. It's like you open it and people are telling you what they think, and they're telling you about what they did or didn't do or whatever. So there's this kind of way of kind of talking. But I think with gossip, we have to be really careful that, again, we're not engaged in these other kinds of negative speech. Or we're not engaged in speech that boosts our ego in a negative way. Engaged in a kind of speech that putting the other person down makes us feel better about ourselves. Okay, so let's talk about the next quote from the Buddha is, monks, a statement endowed with five factors is well spoken. So here's what in the Buddha's definition is well spoken speech. Which five? It is at the right time. It is spoken in truth. It is spoken affectionately. And it is spoken beneficially. So the five are right time, spoken in truth, spoken affectionately, and spoken beneficially.
That's four.
And the fifth one is spoken with a mind of goodwill. Thank you for keeping me on track here. Okay, spoken at the right time. So again, we can speak the truth. The example I came up with is maybe, you know, somebody's getting ready to take a test. They're about to walk in the door. You don't say to them whether it's true or not, you know, you're a lousy test taker. So that's the example I thought of. So this way in which we really have to include the totality of the situation to us ascertain whether or not this is the right time to do it. The other thing is people say things like, I told you so. Okay, that's not the right time. After somebody's done something, oh, I told you so. Right, that's like that thing that people do. So the spoken in truth part, again, the example of going in as somebody taking a test, it might be that you could say to somebody, you're not a very good test taker, but they would be like 3 months before they took the test as a, you know, if they had asked you as a way to encourage them maybe to take a class on how to do the GED or something like that. But so there's this way in which I think that the right time and spoken in truth really have to go together. You can't separate those two. They're so important that they go together. So spoken affectionately, I think that's really nice. This is this kind of speech that connects us. This kind of speech where we just go into it really caring about the other person, that we have this kind of deep affinity and affection for them. And so that deep affinity, affection, again, goes back to this, our teaching about Buddha nature, is that we are family. We want to have a kind of deep affection for each other. We want to have a kind of willingness to look at the other person's life, a willingness to be present for that other person in a way that's very respectful, a way that does not separate, a way that it honors the and the value of that other person's life. Sometimes this is really hard to do. But if we start out with that as a kind of model, if we start out with that as a way of viewing the nature of this interaction, then we're going to have a much better chance of being skillful. And I think in our practice, you know, people talk about being enlightened, but enlightenment is being skillful. So this way in which we are able to really connect with our life, which must be inclusive of all being, in this very, very respectful, gentle, kind, insightful way towards each other and towards ourselves, thoughtful, being thoughtful. So I think all this is in there. There are times when we have to respond to violence with violence. It might be that there is a time for that. But that can't be our first response. I think we always have to try to look at the alternatives that come from this teaching of our interconnectedness. And also, for most of us, we're not actually engaged in a kind of physical violence with each other. So what we're engaged in is a kind of mental violence, a kind of speech violence and a kind of violence towards ourselves and others that we really need to look at, that's really important. And also the way we think. How do we think? How do we think about things? Because the way we think about things is how we're going to respond. So paying attention to what we're thinking about and how we're defining the nature of our experience through our thought. And to question that. To question those kind of thoughts that come in our head. This is that person's bad. I was trying to think of an example that wasn't too loaded. So I felt like, as a lesbian, I could say this. So, you know, people used to think that gay people could not have children. I mean, I've had that thought. And I was listening to Elton John, I think, talking about... No, it wasn't Elton John. It was the guy who plays Gandalf in the... Ian McKellen. So he's a gay man, and he was talking about... And he's, I think, in his 70s. And he was saying... Oh yeah, just came out of his mouth. He just said, "Oh yeah, gay people can't have children, so I didn't have to worry about that because I don't particularly like children." And then he went, "Oh," like that. And he said, "Oh, that's not true, actually. You know, of course, gay people can have children." But that was kind of a stereotype thought that people had for a long time before. Oh, gay people have children, and people show up with children, right? Like lesbians have kids, gay men have kids. And then we all went, oh, yeah. So that's a kind of unexamined thought that goes through somebody's head that we just kind of take on as some kind of truth, some kind of norm, until society changes or whatever, and then we go, now it's like, I would laugh about that. But I could say that I've had that thought. Not recently, but that was a thought that I had when I was younger. So that we actually pay attention to what's going through our heads. Pay attention to those little one-liners that are flashing through our heads. Pay attention to the thing that says, this always, or I always, or they always do this thing. So I think this, we could talk maybe, that's a little bit about being affectionate. Talking affectionately. Thinking how we think. All right, the last one is spoken with goodwill. So, you know, ultimately we want to help and encourage each other. That's what we want. That's one of the great things about Houston. I was reading the paper today in a column, and this is so true. People in Houston were not coming up to somebody's door and saying, are you Jewish? Are you black? Are you gay? Are you this? Did you vote for Trump? Did you vote for Hillary? I'm sorry, I can't pick you up. People just came up to the door and they just said, you know, hey, jump in the boat. Let me help you. Let's form a line of people and hold hands and get this person out of their house. So there wasn't any divisiveness. There wasn't any discussion about whether or not this person agreed with me politically or their whatever their social being was, or however their lifestyle choices were, whatever it is, right? However you wanted to find those things that were so polarized right now. People just went and helped each other. That's what they're doing. They're just helping each other. They're not qualifying that. So this is this way where all of a sudden when this happened, everybody remembered that they're not separate. Everybody remembered that we're all one big family trying to get through our lives. Everybody said, people had boats said, yeah, I can't sit at home. I got to go out and help these people. So what we want to cultivate is that mindset. That's the mindset we want to cultivate with each other. And in everyday lives, it's so hard. Somebody pulls in front of us in their car and we're like, ugh! You know, I want to smack you. We don't think to ourselves, oh, you know, I've done that. You know, I've done that. So maybe I'll just take a deep breath and let it go. So it's really important. I talk about this a lot, but it's really important that we look at those small things in our lives. Let's take the inspiration of what has been happening in Houston and apply it when we're at the grocery store, driving our car, talking to our friends, or talking to people we don't like, or whatever, that we extend that generosity and interconnection to each other. Thank you very much.